All right, so I'm Derek, and I originally hail from New London, Connecticut, where my love for technology first took root back in the mid-90s when I was a youngster. And back then, I was always kind of hacking, tinkering with computers and phone systems. When I was about 16, I was fortunate to meet a couple of mentors that I'd met at a local Linux user group meeting. One of them is here right now. His name's Roy. And the other one, his name's Brian. And unfortunately, he left us a few weeks ago, so fairly recent. So anyway, they taught me about electronics and, introduced me to programming. And so then after, sorry about that. Getting used to the controls here. Okay, let me dial this in here. So after high school, I served 6 years in the Army National Guard as an electronics technician. That experience helped me kind of further hone my skills in technology. And eventually, I transitioned into the IT field and beginning in what I fondly call my soul-sucking help desk career. I was at a telecom company, so that was fun. Now I work as a security analyst for a small company out in Wisconsin. So I'm out there with my wife and three kids, and I just love instilling a love of technology in them. So we do all kinds of little fun projects. I try to get them involved, getting them introduced to Scratch programming, a little bit of Arduino tinkering and things like that. Just mostly basic stuff. Let's get like LEDs to work and things like that. One of my favorite memories fairly recently was I took my kids to Hack for Kids out and at the CypherCon conference in Milwaukee. And my oldest daughter at the time, she went to the like lock picking, and she learned how to rake a 4-pin lock. And she was working on the fifth pin lock before we had to like get kicked out. So, real proud of her for that. It was pretty awesome. I'm all over with this mouse here. Whoops. Oh boy. Okay. So, my other two kids, my middle daughter, she's fairly inquisitive. And then my, 5-year-old, he's going to grow up and be an engineer, I think. In the middle here, that's a picture of him with his Lego motherboard he made. And I don't know where he picked that up. I wasn't like sitting there showing him motherboards or anything. So he just like showed me that. And I'm like, he's got bus lines and everything. I'm like, this is crazy. All right. So why do this? Well, so Chromebooks weren't even originally on my radar. The spark for this happened when my wife, was on a hunt for affordable options for our kids, because they get Chromebooks from their school, but we wanted them to have something they could actually use. And it's something to learn and play on, right? And so my wife found some used Chromebooks and at a great price, because used Chromebooks are ridiculously cheap, which is kind of an awesome price point. And so upon receiving them, we found out that the version of Chrome OS that they had was end of support. So knowing my penchant for Linux, putting Linux on things, as it were, my wife suggested that I do that. So then that's kind of when I started my adventure into this. I discovered real quickly how limited these devices were. And with the exception of one, which I have here with me, that I'll kind of demo in a little bit, it's got a removable M.2 drive. Everything else was surface mount soldered to the motherboard on these things, limited to like 4 gigs. I don't even remember what the hard drive size was. It's like just really tiny. I think it was like 64 gigs or something. I don't even know. Really, really tiny. So, but I couldn't resist the challenge. I wanted to see what I could do with these seemingly underwhelming devices, see if I could turn them into something, cool and hopefully useful. So for this project, I used an Acer, two Acer models that were C731 and C740 models. And then this I have here is Lenovo N23. So this one's like the slightly better version out of those three older model. I also explored a newer Asus C433T model. And early on, I realized that Google had designed these things with just significant restrictions, making it necessary to remove these before proceeding with anything else. So a little quick disclaimer here. Don't do this on devices you don't own, because you will avoid warranties and possibly break things. Ideally, older Chromebooks are, I found, best for this project, at least when you're kind of figuring things out with them. I'm going to share my journey kind of figuring this out and remove these restrictions and kind of go over what's needed to replace Chrome OS with Linux to make these things more like traditional computers. So while Google's efforts, you know, to recently they've had pushback, right? You know, it's like, oh, into support, right? And it's like these things basically become e-waste. Well, nobody likes that. So you know, they've extended support on the newer models. You know, they've even improved the hardware and enabled running Android apps. But I'm not really a fan of the Google ecosystem. You know, kind of the control, the tracking they do. It's kind of creepy. To kind of underscore the importance of this project, I'm gonna kind of cite an article here from The Verge. It discusses the challenges faced by school districts using Chromebooks, such as repairability issues, auto update expiration dates, and e-waste concerns. So the U.S. Public Interest Research Group Education Funds report, it's Chromebook Churn. And it highlights the financial and environmental impacts of Chromebooks reaching end of life prematurely. So it emphasizes the difficulties in obtaining replacement parts and the high costs of repairs. The report also raises concerns about the short auto update expiration dates leading to the e-waste and increased costs for schools. PIRG suggests eliminating the automatic update expiration system, increasing the availability of replacement parts, and promoting the use of alternative operating systems like Linux to extend the lifespan of the Chromebooks. And so Google has responded by emphasizing its efforts to extend years of guaranteed support for Chromebooks and its commitment to sustainability through regular software updates and eco-friendly manufacturing practices. Sorry if I sound like a robot. Okay, so I kind of wanted to dive into a little bit of the history here, kind of like how we got here, right? So how did these Chromebooks get so prevalent, right? Namely in academia, right? That's where we're seeing these things popping up all over the place. So on May 11th, 2011, at the Google I.O. conference in San Francisco, a new kind of laptop was introduced, the Chromebook, right, developed by Samsung and Acer. These devices were built around Chrome OS, an operating system essentially centered on the Chrome web browser. Initially, there was a lot of skepticism about their potential. Initial reactions, you know, were early on doubtful. So Dan Ackerman, a tech journalist, recalled seeing Chromebooks as a step back from netbooks. They were priced between $349 and $499. These early Chromebooks were seemed like limited web browsers, unable to run traditional software, leading many to question their usefulness. So the first steps were budget-friendly but basic. The first Chromebooks faced the challenges that, you know, they were praised for being free of bloatware, common on Windows laptops, but their limited functionality led to frustration. Simple tasks like opening zip files were problematic due to unsupported formats. Early reviews were lukewarm. often comparing them unfavorably to netbooks and tablets at the time. Turning the corner, adaptation and innovation, over the years, Chromebook evolved. And by 2017, Samsung Chromebook Pro marked a significant breakthrough. It was priced at $550. It featured a sleek design, high-resolution touchscreen, and a built-in stylus. Crucially, it introduced access to the Google Play Store, allowing users to run Android apps, addressing one of the biggest early criticisms, which I'm going to kind of poke fun at some of that stuff here in a little bit. And then cue the pandemic, right? So it was a catalyst for change. In 2020, COVID-19 changed everything. You know, we're all basically sent home. And so with schools and offices closing, millions shifted to remote work and learning. Suddenly, the affordable web-based Chromebooks became indispensable to families. You know, they needed multiple laptops, and Chromebooks were cost-effective. So it was perfect for essential online tasks required for remote work and education. So kind of today, by 2021, Chromebooks had firmly established themselves as vital tools for students, workers, and everyday users. They offered a blend of affordability, simplicity, and functionality. Right? So Dan Ackerman noted that what was once seen as a secondary device had become a primary tool for many. The addition of Android app support turned Chromebooks into versatile machines capable of much more than just browsing the web, right? So why hack your Chromebook with Linux? For those of us that are, tech enthusiasts and developers, there's even more potential. Hacking your Chromebook with Linux opens up, a lot more possibilities, allowing you to run a broader range of software and development tools. This transforms the Chromebooks from simple, browser in a box and future e-waste into versatile and customizable devices. So, Google did try to add value by allowing Android apps and Debian-based virtual machines. The limitations within Google's ecosystem remain. So by installing Linux, you can break free from these constraints and fully harness your Chromebook's capabilities. So embracing the full potential from humble beginnings to essential pandemic tools, Chromebooks have come a long way. Their journey is a testament of how technology can evolve, adapt, and meet changing needs. As Dan Ackerman highlights, the Chromebook story is one of those of resilience and innovation. For those looking to maximize their capabilities, installing Linux can offer great flexibility and functionality, transforming these devices into versatile tools for various tasks. So with that, we're going to dive into the steps and kind of how to make this happen, at least from the four Chromebook models that I've had experience with. Before we do that, though, I want to take a little satirical dig here. I say it works on low-cost computers, right? And this is defensive Chrome OS, right? So tongue-in-cheek here, we're going to, sure, as long as you don't mind your computer struggling with anything more demanding than a open web browser. It's like multitasking, forget about it, good security with automatic updates. Yeah, because nothing says secure like having Google in control of your updates. Trusting Google with your data and updates is like trusting Dr. Evil with your world domination plans. What could go wrong? And then the running the Android apps. Oh, yes, because who doesn't love running phone apps on their laptops? It's a delightful experience. If you enjoy apps not optimized for a bigger screen and limited functionality, fast boot up. True Chrome OS boots up fast, just in time to remind you that it's still a glorified web browser. And then tight integration with Google services. Google knows best, right? Especially when it comes to tracking your every move and ensuring you're perpetually logged into their ecosystem. Privacy, what's that? So real quick before moving on from this, I do want to acknowledge that some people earnestly want to run Android apps on their Chromebook, right? That was one of the main pushback that people had when Chromebooks came out. While this is still possible, there are still limitations, right? Certain apps just aren't optimized to run on the desktop. That being said, there is a similar option available in Linux with the AnBox Snap package. So I will have links and things like this available that I'm going to try to make a way to get on like a wiki or something somewhere to share with everybody that's interested in looking up these additional resources, because I'm not going to go too any deeper on the AnBox project here, but I will have links available here. So kind of as I mentioned earlier, my biggest issue with Chrome OS and Google is just the unsettling level of tracking they employ. I mean, we already have to deal with this on our Android phones, right? I mean, it's I don't need another device that does additional, stuff. Where am I at on time? Whoa. All right. So just a couple of the limitations of Chrome OS I'm just going to kind of highlight here. It's lack of customization is one of the things. Users face severe limitations in customizing their desktop environment, system configuration, which can be frustrating for power users. App compatibility, inconsistent performance on Android apps on Chrome OS can lead to less than an ideal experience. The presence of two separate app stores, you have the Google Play Store and the Chrome Web Store, that can be confusing for users. Software compatibility, Chrome OS may not support demanding programs like Photoshop or video editing. And I think that's really more of a limitation on the hardware. Obviously the Chrome OS may not as well, but the hardware on a lot of these devices, especially the older ones, are not up for those tasks. Cloud storage, so you have limited onboard storage, so you heavily rely on the cloud, such as Google Drive, and may run out quickly for users. So you have limited local file system access. Chrome OS has restrictions, restricted access to the local file system, which can be a drawback for users needing I can't guarantee that what I'm proposing will fix all these problems. I just think our chances will be better with a different approach. So now that we've kind of covered the why and the limitations of Chrome OS, take a high-level look at the steps that I'm going to go over here. I've kind of broke it down. Like we have gather Chromebook specifications, remove the hardware, software read-write protections, enter developer mode, flash the firmware for boot sequence control, enable boot from USB, create the bootable USB, install Linux, and then troubleshoot the inevitable problems. So when hacking a Chromebook to run Linux, understanding your device's specifications is crucial for several interconnected reasons. During my journey, I spent countless hours scouring sites like MrChromebox.tech, Krolltrabook, and Reddit to ensure that my hardware choices would support the Linux distributions I was considering, and even then it wasn't perfect. So first and foremost, knowing your Chromebook specifications ensures that you've chosen a compatible distribution. Different models have varying hardware configurations, and this information helps in selecting the right distribution. Verifying your Chromebook meets the specific hardware requirements of Linux distribution is vital to prevent installation or performance issues. I found that these Chromebook, the hardware on these things is like all over the place, So anything we can do to try to like mitigate that, all the better. So some Linux distributions require, specific firmware versions for BIOS or UEFI updates. So, understanding this helps determine the compatibility. I just want to ensure a smooth transition. Identifying any proprietary hardware components is essential for driver support. I'm still dealing with some driver issues with one of the Chromebooks. The newer Chromebook anyway. And so obviously, you know, understanding this helps optimize it. Selecting a distribution optimized for the configuration. So, this is a Chromebook read-write protection kind of like timeline, if you will, for the based on kind of the generations of Chromebooks. So, the early models, 2012 to 2013, had like physical jumpers and switches on the motherboard, and then you have 2014 through 2017, they had screws. And then you had the 2017 Plus CR50 models that basically have like either a battery sense line or you have to kind of use like a Suzy Q cable type configuration to deal with that. There was actually somebody here at the con that was just dealing with that. They did do the Suzy Q method to go over that. So let me see, now that I kind of went off, let me just find where I'm at here. So most of the models that I used for this project fall in that kind of middle category, the pre-CR50 one. There's one newer one that was kind of that 2017 model, and I was able to just remove the battery from it, and that was enough to allow me to flash it. So let's see. Okay, so removing the read-write protections. So again, the models I have, we have a screw. So this is my daughter pointing out where the screw was on this one. So disabling it requires, you know, bypassing the physical mechanisms like, you know, screws or jumpers, disconnecting the battery or using the Suzy Q cable that I mentioned. This can be disabled through, and then the software write protection can be disabled through the firmware commands, allowing it to modifications for to read-only regions. So the importance, custom firmware disabling write protection is necessary for flashing the custom firmware or modifying the boot behavior Google binary block. I spelled that out because it was a little bit of a mouthful. So what GBB flags do are shorten the developer mode, boot screen timeout from 30 seconds to 1 second, and remove the beep. Prevents accidental disablement of developer mode via spacebar. Force enablement of legacy boot mode, regardless of cross-system flag value. So set legacy boot mode as the default boot path, negates the need to use Control L. And then troubleshooting, enabling modifications and facilitates troubleshooting and recovery process in case of firmware related issues. Disabling write protection typically involves steps like entering developer mode, manipulating hardware, and using specialized tool like the case close debugging feature on the CR50 models. Devices. So the CR50 firmware runs on the Google security chip and supporting closed case debugging. So personal experience here. I got my daughter Elena involved. So identifying and locating the jumper screw was straightforward for the three older model of Chromebooks that we had. Typically, the screw could be identified by its distinctive contact or a larger head, sometimes marked by silk screen, but this wasn't always reliable. On the first Chromebook, I found a picture online pointing out the screw, but for the other models, I had to rely on visual inspection. The newer 2022 model had a read-write protection tied to the battery sense line. I think I'd mentioned that earlier. So I removed the battery. And, you know, the process was a lot more engaging when I had Elena search for the screw with me so that, you know, And then I had her carefully remove it. I wanted to get her kind of hands-on. So, you know, this was a nice experience, a bit of an introduction for a little bit of hardware hacking for her. And I'm briefly going to touch on the CZQ method because, like, I didn't use it, but I do want to point out that, you know, it's a valuable technique for devices that require it. So the fine folks at CrultureBook.com provide a comprehensive guide on this method for unbricking flashing firmware. So real quick, you know, the abstract on CrultureBook.com is, you know, that the article on CrultureBook.com details, you know, these requirements and steps for the CZQ cable to flash a Chrome OS device with CCD enabled. So this includes necessary hardware like the USB-C debug cable and a secondary device running Linux-based OS. This process involves disconnecting the external power, removing the Chromebook's bottom cover, disconnecting the battery, and setting up a Linux environment to install use the flash ROM utility. So after connecting the CZQ cable, the guide explains how to verify the connection, open the CCD state, and choose the appropriate firmware file to flash. It also covers, you know, preserving the device's vital product data and the steps to safely flash the firmware. This guide is an excellent resource along with MrChromebox.tech for, you know, anyone looking to kind of hack Chromebooks. Offering detailed instructions and support for various Chromebook models. Again, I'm going to have kind of just links to all these resources you can read, dive into it a little bit more. So next we kind of engaged a developer mode. So developer mode grants users elevated privileges, enabling them to modify system settings or install custom software, crucial for disabling software firmware protection. So the activation process, you enter recovery mode by pressing and holding the escape, refresh, and pressing power. And then pressing Control D to enter developer mode, and then confirming, you know, when prompted, it's going to essentially do like a bit of like a factory reset, right? So upon the first boot, the system securely wipes all user data, ensuring a clean transition to the developer mode. So access to advanced features, developer mode unlocks additional functionality and customization options not available in standard mode. Users gain greater control over their devices, allowing for experimentation customization according to their needs. Entering developer mode entails certain risks, such as potential data loss during the transition process. Users should ensure they understand the implications before proceeding. So then we flash the firmware. So flashing firmware on Chrome OS devices can unlock, you know, various capabilities such as dual booting, which I had somebody ask me about that actually. I personally haven't felt the need that I want to try to dual boot these things. This is a great script here that allows you to do just that, as well as the full ROM wipe, which is kind of what I did. So I'm kind of find where I'm at on my slide here. But yeah, I was kind of going through all these options here. But essentially, for the sake of time here, going to not go over all that. So essentially what I did, the full ROM version, and that allowed me to, you know, replace the OS completely. So my personal experience with the full ROM firmware, the flashing involved using the full ROM version completely to replace the stock firmware on the 2022 Asus C433 T Chromebook. That's you know, the newer one. Initially, I encountered difficulties because I was trying to figure out how to use the cross shell, because that's what I did on the older ones, and instead it required the VT2 terminal. So this mistake led to, you know, several failed attempts. so flashing firmware on the older models like the Acer C731, 740, and this Lenovo was considerably easier due to the simpler read-write protection methods. You know, these devices used screws or jumpers to disable the hardware write protect, making it the process more straightforward compared to the newer models, requires more advanced techniques. Kind of always ensure that you're in the correct terminal environment based on the model that you're working with. Before attempting to run the firmware utility script. So just make sure you back up your stock firmware before flashing the full ROM to safeguard against any potential issues in case you need to kind of revert back. Enabling USB support on Chrome OS devices, crucial for, being able to boot it and load the OS. Now, I've noticed that some of these devices actually don't have a USB drive at all. So that's another challenge to overcome in and of itself. But for my purpose with the Chromebooks I had, they all had USB. So, again, I kind of touched on, it's like the crash method. So that's essentially you access that by doing like Control-Alt-T, and then, you type shell, and then you get your root privileges by typing sudo su, right? And then you execute this command, slash user, slash libexec, slash debugd, slash helpers, slash dev, underscore features, underscore USB, underscore boot, right? So that's why I wrote all this stuff down, because I'm not remembering all that off the top of my head. So that's the method for the older models. Now, the VT2 method I was babbling about earlier, to kind of get into there, you have to do the Control-Alt-Refresh or the right arrow key and then log in as Kronos, and then use sudo-i to get your root prompt. And then you need to set the dev underscore boot underscore USB flag to 1 using this cross-system dev underscore boot underscore USB equals 1 command. So that's going to be more suitable for the newer models. And then, I've got a bunch more. Yeah, I would just say document the steps as you go. That was one of the things I wasn't always the best at. I kind of just jumped in and got myself into trouble a lot because, I should have documented a little better as I went. So lessons learned, so to speak. All right, so I'm going to move on. So, vocal fillers. The first attempt to create the bootable USB, they could be relatively straightforward. I tried using, Rufus or whatever, and that failed multiple times. I couldn't figure out why that wasn't working for me. Anyway, so then I grabbed Bolena Etcher, and I was able to just boom, 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 three-step process, and that worked. So just real quick, I'm just going to kind of highlight the distros that I used for this project. I used the Ubuntu 22.04. Which I found out later was end of development, so I'll talk about that in a minute too if I have time. And then Lubuntu 2204 LTS, which is the lightweight distro. So when I first attempted to install Ubuntu on my Chromebook, I was filled with excitement, only to be quickly deflated by hardware limitations that made the installation fail. Determined to find a solution, I turned to Gallium OS, known for its Chromebook compatibility. However, my first attempt at installing Gallium OS also ended in failure. I faced a range of frustrating audio issues with Ubuntu, and sometimes I'd get annoying horn noise or no sound at all. But after some persistent troubleshooting, I managed to resolve the sound issues on a couple of the older Chromebook models, and finally I tried installing Gallium OS, and this time it worked flawlessly. No audio, no issues, no lag, and no broken apps. Everything just worked perfectly. So I think persistence pays off. So again, my first attempt with Ubuntu, I don't know why I was trying to cram a full version on such limited hardware, but that's kind of where I started. It was just kind of just being dumb, I guess. So while the full version wasn't great for the older units with the hardware limitation, the minimal install worked okay. though I found it was kind of marginally better than Chrome OS, minus the privacy issues. Gallium OS. So yeah, I here lies a tribute to a short-lived triumph, right? So it was a Linux distribution that specifically optimized for Chromebooks. It, you know, it offered unparalleled performance and compatibility. Like I said, I had a great experience with it. This Lenovo I brought here has Gallium loaded on it, so I want to try to get to demo on that here in a second. So I thought it was really cool. Essentially, what I had to do to kind of overcome the challenge getting that working, I had to toggle the Wi-Fi off. It's probably due to the out of development issues that I was having with it or whatever. And then once it it just worked really well. So I was gonna really just like wax eloquent on Gallium OS because I was kind of enamored. But again, for the sake of time, I'm going to kind of skip over that. We can do like an after thing if anybody has questions about that or whatever. But so I'm going to kind of skip over to the I wanted to show that like that project was it was a really cool project. I don't know how it ended up, you know, dying or whatever, but this was a really awesome like lookup page here. Like, so you could just find your device on this list and find out if it was supported or not. And it gave you all kinds of awesome specifications and you know, tips and things to kind of get things working. And then you'd go on their site and find the, you know, model of or version of Gallium OS that was, you know, tailored specifically to your hardware. That's one of the things I loved about it. I just thought it was awesome. And again, you know, despite its success, Gallium OS development ceased. So I'm sad panda. Marking an end of an era. Users are now transitioning to other, you know, Linux distros, but I think Gallium OS's legacy continues to inspire the community. Although it's no longer under development, the lessons and successes I had with Gallium continue to inform, you know, my work with the alternative distributions. And this one here is, you know, about Lubuntu. It works on multiple devices, PCs, laptops, Raspberry Pis, and Chromebooks. So I was going to share that, you know, my daughter Elena installed this on her Chromebook herself. So, yeah, it was pretty awesome. It was a really easy installer, straightforward. And kind of the after action, I really thought the LXQT desktop was quite pleasing. You know, and no surprise, though, we were plagued by the sound issue again. But fortunately, I was able to find a command on Reddit that, you know, run this options SND. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically edit the ALSA.base config file, restart, and then it works. Where am I at on time? 10 minutes? Okay. So I was going to share a really cool troubleshooting story that I came across on a YouTuber's channel where she was doing a Chromebook project herself. It's Veronica Explains. So I kind of had this done up in like a story format. So it's just a little snippet from one of her videos. So imagine you've got this Lenovo ThinkPad C13 Yoga, and you're excited to transform it into a Linux powerhouse. You know, the journey starts smoothly with the installation of core boot firmware. You eagerly proceed to install Debian 12, anticipating a seamless transition. However, things take an unexpected turn. After booting from Debian 12 ISO, you're met with an endless loop of frustration. Every attempt to select an option in Grub results in the system restarting. It's a perplexing dilemma because other distributions installed perfectly without a hitch, yet Debian 12 refuses to cooperate. Determined to get to the bottom of this, you embark on a troubleshooting adventure. First, you experiment with different ISOs, Debian 12 ISO stubbornly loops, but a glimmer of hope appears when a Debian nightly testing ISO installs successfully and boots up perfectly. However, this success is short-lived as the boot loop returns post-installation, courtesy of Grub 2.06 version reverting back. You realize that Grub version is the key to this puzzle. The Debian testing ISO used Grub 2.12, which seems to bypass the issue. Armed with this knowledge, you decide to manually modify the boot targets in the ISO's Grub command line to point directly to your install Debian system. Booting your system successfully using the ISO's Grub 2.12, you then install the newer Grub version from the Debian's SID branch. And then it goes into kind of all the commands that you do, and you reboot, success. So now your system boots flawlessly, liberated from the boot loop nightmare. This experience teaches a valuable lesson about the intricacies of firmware and bootloaders. And I didn't personally run into this, so I thought it was really great to kind of, just share that little bit of from people doing similar projects that ran into this kind of weird bizarreness. And it highlights the value of community resources like CulturaBook, forums, that provide critical support and insights during challenging times. And so through a bit of technical wizardry and perseverance, you transform a frustrating obstacle into a triumphant success. This is based on experiences shared by Veronica Explains on her YouTube channel. You can find more awesome content there. And then I kind of want to move on to one other thing, if I can get this to work right. You know what, I'm not even going to pull up this other slide. I'm just going to jump right into that. So this is running Gallium OS. And I wanted to know if this thing would play Doom. There we go. I had to figure out where my controls were again. This is the Lenovo N23. All right, let me quit that. So that's running the chocolate Doom port, in case anybody was curious about that. But I actually have the specifications wrote down. I'd have to look. I don't have it memorized. So to answer those questions about the processor and all that stuff, we can talk about that after. I want to be judicious of time. I thought this was a fun little demo. And you can come up after, outside, if you want to take a look at this thing. This is the one that belongs to my son, Caleb, actually. I think that it was a pretty good success. And that's partly why I'm disappointed that, Gallium is end of development, too, because, it's obviously working on this thing really well. And unfortunately, I can't get updates now, so I'm going to have to maybe switch this one over to Lubuntu or something. But with that, were there any other questions or anything?
Have you ever done anything for dual booting, just in case you want to keep that from off?
Yeah, no, so that's kind of, I briefly kind of alluded to it at the beginning. Somebody else was talking about they wanted to do dual booting. I personally haven't done any dual booting yet. I'm concerned about the hardware limitations of these, not really allowing for that. Now this one does have the removable M.2 drive, so in theory I could update the drive and I may actually try to experiment with that, because I think the main limiting factor there is going to be the hard drive space, right? I got to be able to load a couple of OSs on the thing. So That may be, you know, like a VDOT next type of project.
Is that a pre-CR50 or?
This is, yes. The other like post-CR50 model actually doesn't belong to me. It belongs to my brother-in-law, and he's a mechanic, and so he actually wanted me to load an automotive software on there, so I had to go a different direction with that one. But, you know, here we are. So, yes.
You mentioned running the Android apps in Ubuntu through a special...
Anbox, yep.
Is that costing, like, performance degradation over the Chrome OS for...
Yeah, so right before coming out here, I had actually just discovered that, so I really didn't get a chance to dive into it, unfortunately. But again, I'm going to try to get this stuff loaded up on some sort of, like, where I can share the slides with folks, because I do want to dive into that a little bit more and kind of explore that myself a little bit and kind of see what that was all about. Based on the reviews I read, though... basically, you have the same limitations as far as the optimization of Android apps. It works basically, from what I understand, just as well on the Anbox thing versus like the Chrome OS, you know, options. Just because the developers of those specific apps, you know, don't necessarily have all the optimizations, right? So it's going to be what's been optimized. So.
Galleon was really, like, you find Galleon that much better than Ubuntu? Like, it's, like, a significant, like...
I don't know. I just kind of became a fanboy. Like...
There's no grumblings of, like, forks of people, like, forking it or anything like that. So, like...
I think there was some grumblings of it on Reddit a little bit. I think some people were maybe going to try to pick up the project or something, but I don't really know. I know it's like a bit out of my scope right now for me to try to jump in there and do things with it because, you know, full-time job, wife, three kids, all that kind of stuff. I just don't have the, you know, the bandwidth. But, I mean, so again, Lubuntu's awesome. Like, it worked really good on the other Chromebooks. But unlike when I put Galleon on this one, I didn't have any of the issues that I really, so when I put Lubuntu on the other one, I still had audio issues that I had to resolve, right? I had to troubleshoot some things. This one, it loaded up, like, everything worked. I mean, the touchpad worked, the screen works, like, the touch screen works, like, you know, sound worked. I didn't have any issues. It just, so, you know, that kind of sold me, at least on this one.
Yes.
Do you know why the development of Galleon OS was...
I actually don't. So right before coming out here, I kind of stalked the one of the main developers on LinkedIn, messaged him, and I didn't get a response back. So, yeah.
I was just saying, I've done this with an Asus.
Yeah.
Flip.
Yeah.
And the big issue, which I know you didn't really go into, but the firmware change. And I know with the Flip, like, basically, when I did the firmware, I basically lost all the audio on it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no support without the Chrome OS.
Right, and I, exactly.
Dual boot would have been, well, and I've done dual boot on it, so
yeah.
I kind of wish I just stayed dual boot. Just for-
there's a case for dual boot right there, yeah, because I have a newer one that I'm, okay, I got 2 minutes left. Yeah, I ran into the same thing with, like, the newer one. I'm still dealing with sound issues. I'm still troubleshooting and trying to figure out some solution for it.
Just personal experience, I'd recommend dual boot if you want audio. If you didn't need audio, it's fine.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's it right there, yeah.
To my heart, like you said, hardware, other systems, it's not. But
right.
There's a whole firmware wrap. Well, it's literally... Core OS is a rabbit. So.
Yeah, and I noticed I had like flip screen issues too with one of the flip models I had that I was playing with. It was like all sideways for a minute. It was weird. Okay, I think I'm pretty much at time. I'm going to call it right here. Thank you.